The rain report for December 18th, 2009 follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, this is The Rain Report, available as a weekly podcast and download, formatted for transmission over amateur radio VHF UHF nets. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. The world above 50 MHz is a magical place, consisting of exotic digital modes, unpredictable operating conditions that don't necessarily rely on sunspots, and bands that literally every newly licensed U.S. ham can enjoy. One column that covers the world above 50 MHz is Gene Zimmerman, W3ZZ's World Above 50 MHz, that appears in QST Magazine, the monthly publication of the ARRL, the National Amateur Radio Association. Gene is a noted VHF DXer and award-winning contester. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke with Gene about his column last summer when the Central States VHF Society held its annual conference just outside Chicago. Keep in mind, this interview was conducted in late July.
I'm right now approaching the end of July. My deadline is supposed to be about a day or two after August 1st, but because one-third of my column deals with band activities, people send me emails and they say, I worked this guy or that guy or here's something interesting that happened. So they give me until August 10th. In return, since one of the things that I did professionally in the biomedical field that I worked in for about 30 years, I was an editor. I used to write. Part of the job that I had to do was to review grant applications. And I did this by hiring non-government consultants and assigning them these grant applications, depending on what they knew and what they didn't know about a particular application. And then they would write reviews, and then they would discuss what they wrote. And then I would have to put the discussion plus the things they wrote together as a report. Now, the report could be as long as they made it. I didn't have to worry about space, but I did have to worry about editing. I had to put things together so it sounded like one person wrote it. And many of my reviewers, English was not their primary language. So if, for instance, an Oriental did a review, Oriental languages don't have articles like the and so Orientals, even ones with a very good command of English, tend to put the where it shouldn't be and not put it where it should be, and you'd know right away. So you'd see the people who submitted these applications would only know that 16 people reviewed their application, but they didn't know who the lead reviewers were. So if I didn't do my editing right, they could figure it out. So it was my job to paper over what these people wrote so that nobody could tell who actually wrote it, even if a particular reviewer had a very unusual writing style. I'd eliminate that. So you learn a lot as an editor. So my columns, I get the extra 10 days, but in return, I turn out something that's almost copy ready. Now, they have to worry about diagrams and things like that, although I do a lot of the diagrams myself. I wish that weren't so. I think that they have some very good professional graphics people at the league, and I wish they would not use what I do, and they would do it themselves. What I do would tell them what to do, but they could make a much prettier job than I do. But they've tended, especially in recent years, when I make maps, for instance, they're done by taking the ARRL grid map, putting it into Photoshop, and drawing lines on it, or coloring in the grids, different colors. And that's all pretty time-consuming. If I knew what I was doing, I could write a program that would do that. I could say, well, color in the following 27 grids. Draw a line between FM 27 and EN 63. But I don't know how to do that, so I have to do them by hand. They could do that. I mean, that's what a graphics person does for a living, and they're very good at it. Plus, they have a few forms that I don't have that are really nice. In any case, my August 10th deadline will appear in October. The October QST comes out sometime around the 20th of September. So the actual lead time is such that I give them the thing at the beginning of a month. By the 20th of the month, they've edited it and put it into page format and sent off the final format to whoever electronically prints QST. And that happens approximately a month before you actually get it. There's as much lead time as you want. Of course, it also means that I'm going to be reviewing the summer of 2009 in November. Well, you know, it's cold by November. Nothing wrong with that. People can remember how great it was in the summer because the bands will be stone cold dead by November unless there's some Trovo floating around, but there won't be anything else. I can assure you of that.
When are you going to write about June of 2009?
Well, I've already written about June 2009. All my columns have a lead. The lead is like two-thirds of the column. And about a third of it is what happened during the month. This time the lead was a little shorter because there's a lot that happened. June's the most active month that we have. So what happened in June? Every year is different. This is sporadic-y, and it is called sporadic for a reason, and that is that things don't happen the same way every year.
You're talking about 6 meters.
Talking about 6 meters. Usually, people who live in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic, but mainly the Northeast, meaning New England, New York, and New Jersey, they get most of the DX. They have the best shot into Europe. They work quite a bit of stuff in the Caribbean. Only Florida does better. And that's because when the skip is good, it skips over Florida and goes directly into New England. It's one hop up there. And even where I am in Washington, D.C., it often skips over me. I'll hear somebody in Massachusetts working in the Caribbean. I don't hear that station at all. June is mainly a 6 meter month. Now, there could be tropospheric ducting in June, and there was a little bit this year, but most of it is E-skip, and it's also 2 meter E-skip. There was a very good opening in the last week of the month. We got something that the Europeans see all the time, but we don't see it very often. You get a cloud that ionizes to the point where the maximum usable frequency of the cloud is greater than 144 megahertz. Then you get 2 meter E-skip. But as you can imagine, that doesn't last very long usually, and it's over a very narrow range of geographic location. If there isn't somebody in exactly the right place at either end of the path, you could have a cloud at 160 megahertz or 180 megahertz. Won't do you any good. Won't work anybody. In Europe, when you see these clouds, very frequently any station that can see the cloud from any direction can work someone on the other side of the cloud, mirror image, 180 degrees out. You can visualize that.
You're listening to Gene Zimmerman, W3ZZ, editor of QST's The World Above 50 MHz column. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, will conclude his conversation with Gene in a moment. This is the Rain Report, which updates Fridays, well, most of the time anyway, at therainreport.com. We'll be right back.
In the United States, very frequently, it all goes from one point to another point in more or less the same direction. And the cross direction at right angles, you don't see that very often. But this one opening in June, it wasn't mobile clouds, it was the same cloud. But people down in Florida were working up into Minnesota, the Dakotas. Whereas most of the activity was just north of where I was, in New Jersey and New England. And they were working stations in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. So you can see it produces something that looks on a map like an X. And these clouds are very interesting. If they persist, the cloud, and this happens on 6 meters as well, the cloud starts further to the south and it drifts northwestward. Don't ask me why, but it does. And as the sun moves, the cloud continues to move westward and further north. And so it may end, especially on 6 meters, with openings, say, from where I live in District of Columbia to Minnesota and the Dakotas and Montana. And they may even lengthen out to get more than one hop, and you work into the Pacific Northwest, like Oregon and Washington. That doesn't happen very often, but does happen. It's happened a couple of times this year. So that's the fun of sporadic E. It is sporadic. You never know. And if you're not alert, you'll miss something.
The Europeans have an amateur band at up around, what is it, 70?
It's 70 megahertz. That band is actually pretty popular in Europe. In this country, it falls between channel 4 and channel 5. I rhetorically asked that question. In my February column, I talked about the coming of digital TV and what does that mean to amateurs. And I said one of the possibilities is that maybe we could get a 70 megahertz band. Last year, my predecessor, W3EP, worked a station in Europe on 70 megahertz crossband from 50. And I think that may have been the first time that's ever been done. You would think that would have happened more often, but it hasn't. And so I made that suggestion in the column, and they took it out. I have a deal with the ARRL. The deal is they don't censor what I say. I won't bash their advertisers. I may bash them, but I'll make it very clear why I'm bashing them. But I won't bash their advertisers. And I won't say what I think. You really ought to buy Radio A and not Radio B. They have to live with Company A and Company B. And so I won't put that in writing. And I won't tell you what Radio A and Radio B are either for an interview. But I have my preferences just like everybody else. The one thing, however, that I will let them do is if they know something that's politically sensitive, and I've said something that could cause them some kind of heartburn politically, they can fix that. Just tell me why they're doing it. And in this case, I don't know what's up there, but there's something they don't want to deal with. And I think it's because whoever is using that band has been helpful to them in some way dealing with the FCC or with international stuff. I don't know what it is, and I don't care. But it's their belief that we're never going to get 70 megahertz unless some of the users move out of there. And that's fine with me. First of all, the TV stations have not all left Channel 4, Channel 5. It would be a patchwork quilt of laws because you certainly wouldn't want to operate in that little stretch if there is a Channel 4 or Channel 5. You'll just destroy it. And it'll destroy you, even though it's digital.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody thought that all of the channels 2 through 6 anyway would go away, and then there would be still be 7 through 13. Well, there's still stuff from 2 through 6, including 3 or 4 large metropolitan areas. I think Channel 6 in Philadelphia is still on Channel 6.
Right.
I think, is it Nashville, Chattanooga? There's somebody in Tennessee that's on Channel 4, and there's several like that that are in major metropolitan areas, and for reasons that I don't understand, and I'm sure they're political. They haven't moved. They're still where they were, except they have gone digital. The digital has some advantage because they pack them in a little tighter. A digital station, when it reaches at the end of its bandwidth, it has very, very sharp filter, and it doesn't spill over into the adjacent channel. So they'll put 2 channel adjacent stations that their service areas overlap, and they'll put them right next to one another, and apparently their technical people have found that they don't get interference. Considering the league's been very aggressive about trying to get new frequencies, I tend to give them a complete pass on this one. By the way, I'm not an ARRL cheerleader. I will tell you things that I don't think that they do very well, if I think that's the case. But in some cases, they do things very well. In frequency allocation, these WARC conferences, I think they do a very good job with that.
Do you think we'll ever see any of the 220 to 222 megahertz part of the 220 band reallocated?
To amateurs? It's not clear what happened to that band. I know that it was supposed to be used for commercial trunking systems. I believe there are stations in that band, but it's not clear what they are, who they are, what they are, and what they do. I suspect because we asked for some of that back and didn't get it, we have an allocation of 219 to 220, strictly for digital repeaters. But we still don't have anything at 220 to 222.
Do we have any equipment that you can buy off the shelf? They'll operate through 19 to 220?
That's another very good question. I don't know the answer to that. I've never seen any advertised, but I understand that people are using it. They may have actually just gimmicked the synthesizers of some 222 FM radios so that they go down there. But 222 is a shame. That is the best tropo band we have. It's better than 2 meters. You can go further on that band than you can on 2. When the conditions are the same on 2 and 220, you can go further on 220. But because there is no 220 band except in Region 2, and that's where we live, North and South America, there's a 220 band. There is none in Region 1, which is Europe and Africa. There's none in Region 3, which is the Pacific and Japan. Particularly, the key is no Japan. Since they have no domestic market, the Japanese manufacturers, large and small, refused to build 220 equipment. Yaesu did build 220 weak signal stuff, but it's a shame that there isn't any equipment. It is very unlikely that there will be equipment, and it's one of my favorite bands. I have 36 states on 222. There's only a few people in the country that have more, even though I'm on the East Coast. Half of my states are underwater, and I have worked every state that you can work within 1,300 miles of Washington, D.C., except for Nebraska. Digital is the way to do that.
That concludes Hap Hawley's interview with Gene Zimmerman, W3ZZ, editor of QST Magazine's The World Above 50 MHz. Hap interviewed Gene during the 2009 Central States VHF Society Conference outside Chicago this past July. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2009. Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Hap Hawley, Rain's founder and producer, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you all a very 73 from all of us at the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.